originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon. And once again, welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, extending a very special welcome to everyone across HRN Nation, including all of you listening throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, and all of you tuned in to our free live streaming or archive podcast. If you're doing that, you're doing it on our website at horseracingradio.net. And extremely happy to have everyone with me for the next hour as I get the opportunity to visit with a trainer who has had so much success and who is so much a part of what this sport is all about. Tonight's guest graduated from Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. She graduated with a bachelor's degree in economics and a minor in animal science, and she now resides in Coatesville, Pennsylvania, which is about 39 miles west of Philadelphia, with her husband and her two children. She is trainer Elizabeth Merriman. She goes by Lizzie, so we'll start there. And to date, she has recorded 143 career victories, and Lizzie Merriman is our guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton tonight. Lizzie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to have you along for the ride here tonight, and looking forward to hearing your story. I guess let's start at the very beginning. Where did Lizzie Merriman initially become hooked on horses and horse racing?
Well, I grew up in a horse racing family in Maryland, and my father owned and bred quite a number of really nice horses, and he decided the best way to get a good trainer was to breed his own trainers. There's quite a few of us. I have two sisters and a brother that train.
Wow. Do you have any siblings that are not involved in the sport?
Yes, I have a sister that worked in banking and now lives in Switzerland. And I have a brother who he works on a farm doing maintenance. He used to train with his wife also.
Will they still follow the sport, and are they fans of the sport in any way?
Oh, definitely.
I guess you have to be when you grow up in your family, right?
Yes, that's for sure. It's definitely, it was the topic of every dinner conversation.
That's great. Tell me more about your dad.
My dad was John Merriman. He was an owner breeder of racehorses and Guernsey cows. He also had an auction company, and he was very, very smart, especially about pedigrees. He could recite a horse's pedigree back to their fourth dam, and really had a specific idea of what he wanted in broodmares. He would pick them up very cheaply at Fasig Tipton, breed them to $1,000 stallions, and come up with stakes winner after stakes winner, some of which were Twix and Due North and Smart and Quick and Proud Run, all out of just, you know, $2,000 mares by $1,000 stallions. He was quite a master at it.
Wow. What was it like for you growing up around that type of historic operation in thoroughbred racing?
Oh, I mean, it was a lot of fun and a lot of work. We made all of our own hay. My mother was sort of being a naturalist and organic farming and recycling and mixing her own feed rations, and she She had such an eye on every single horse. Every horse on the farm was treated as an individual, and she raised us sort of with that thinking. And she made the most beautiful hay, that alfalfa hay, that you could ever feed a horse, and believed that was what made strong bones and a fast, durable horse. And their horses raced for years. She would always do all the layups, all the care of the babies, everything.
How on earth were your parents able to keep up with all of those responsibilities and raise all of the children too? How did they do it?
I don't really know how they did it, but they worked very, very hard. We all worked in the barn. We all worked in the hay field. It was kind of an old-fashioned type upbringing. They believed in a good education, but they also believed in hard work and doing it yourself.
You know, if I recall, the story about your dad is that he actually, I guess he died doing what he loved. He collapsed one morning walking out of a barn, one of his barns, to look after his horses. So I guess if you're going to leave this earth in any way, it was the ideal way for your father to go. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. And my dad was a real wheeler dealer. He always had something, some sort of deal cooking or something. And he had actually just made a deal to sell a horse that had won through his flat conditions as a steeplechase horse for $60,000. He had just closed the deal, walked out of the barn, and sadly died right there of a heart attack.
Wow. Yeah, just an amazing story. Lizzie Merriman is my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you can't tell already, she is ingrained in the sport of thoroughbred racing, especially in the Mid-Atlantic states and in Maryland. And back to your dad for just a minute. I know he was honored as the Maryland Horse Breeder of the Year back in 1988. That's a tremendous honor that's bestowed upon breeders by the Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association here in Lexington, Kentucky. That had to be special for him, too.
Yes, it was extremely special. He was so excited about that award. He wanted to take my mother down for them both to receive it, but my mother wouldn't leave the farm.
Was she like that? She just wanted to be home and not leave the farm and for any reason? Because that's a pretty special reason to leave.
Yeah, she was definitely like that. I never remember her leaving the farm for more than a night. All of her siblings would meet at Rehoboth Beach in the summers for a week's vacation, and we would all be so excited, and she would go for one night every summer.
Wow.
Otherwise, she was on the farm working, making sure everything was perfect.
But that is so much of the fabric that made them successful, that dedication. You talked about it just a few minutes ago, that dedication to the job and the dedication to the kids. I mean, it was all about the horses and family.
Yep, for sure. We never really went to restaurants or anything like that. We had a family cow, and they raised their own meat. She had an amazing garden, and she made the butter. We drank cow's milk and ate what we grew, just like the horses.
So is this always what you envisioned yourself doing as well?
Not necessarily. When I went to Cornell, I thought about being a vet. Then I thought maybe I'd like to work for a sales company or something like that. Like my father, you know, he ran a sales company, and life takes its different turns. I ended up marrying a steeplechase jockey who became a trainer, and we started training together, and it kind of morphed into that rather than being like a real thought out plan.
You know, Sean Clancy, who is a former steeplechase rider, worked with us here on the network, has worked with us for many, many years. And I know that you know Sean as well. And I have to tell you, you have to be careful with those steeplechase jockeys, Lizzie.
Yeah, I'll say.
You know, wait, speaking of Sean for a minute, you actually trained a horse that he purchased who went on to be a Hall of Famer on the steeplechase side of things, but you were training him on the flat, Goodnight Shirt. Let's skip ahead just a minute here and tell me the story of Goodnight Shirt.
Well, Vince Moscarelli had rented a couple stalls in our Fairhill barn for the winter, and one of the horses that he brought to occupy one of those stalls was Goodnight Shirt. He was unraced. He's a just turned 3-year-old. Sean and I both saw him and thought he was a lovely horse, and I asked Vinny if I could, if he was for sale, and he said, you know, he belonged to his mother and everything of theirs was for sale. So I asked him if I could get on him and gallop him and, you know, see if I liked him. And he said, sure. So I took him out to the track at Fairhill, and I galloped him and thought that he was just like heaven on earth. He was just the most wonderful horse I had pretty much sat on. So I sort of came back and was like, yeah, he's all right. You know, what do you want for him? So we purchased him and ran him through his 3-year-old year on the flat. And then he seemed to be a turf horse, so we were going to give him the winter off. And Sean decided we should sell him as a steeplechase horse. And I was not in favor of the plan because I kind of felt like we had perfection in our hands, and I didn't really want to let go of perfection. But he won out on the argument, and actually somebody else betted him. He passed the bet and everything, and then they decided not to buy him. And then Jack Fisher took the other vet's word and just wrote us a check and bought the horse. So I'm not sure I've ever been sadder to see a horse go, but he was a lovely horse and proved to be a lovely horse throughout his career.
Yeah, a two-time Eclipse Champion steeplechase horse in 2007 and 2008, and as I mentioned, a racing Hall of Famer. After he leaves you and he starts having all that success as a steeplechase horse, would you watch every time he was running, or would you try to go back and watch the replays? What was that like for you?
I would watch him and pay attention, but I was more involved with flat racing and didn't pay that much attention to steeplechasing. I would notice every time he won and sort of think, well, I thought he was really good. I'm not sure I realized he was quite that good, but I knew he was a pretty special horse. I mean, you couldn't sit on him and not know it. You know, he was one of those horses that gave you that rare feeling of, you know, spectacular ability.
Yeah, you used the word perfection to describe him. What does perfection feel like when you're aboard a good horse like that?
Well, that's the only horse I've been on that I ever used that word, perfection, because he had a great mind, incredible mover, had tons of ability, and was 100% sound. And most horses are lacking a little bit in one of those areas. And very, very few horses check off all of those boxes. So that's why, to me, he was perfection.
Yeah, and unfortunately,
he was one of the sweetest, kindest, most lovely horses to be around. But he just had all the ability and all the class and poise and soundness. Perfect win. Everything seemed just perfect on him. You take him to the races, and he was a complete gentleman. Everything he did just exuded class.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we did lose Goodnight Shirt a couple of months ago in mid-October when he died as a result of colic. And I can imagine, Lizzie, that for somebody like yourself who has dedicated her life to horses and to horse racing, that when you hear the news of any horse, but certainly a horse like that that captured you in such an emotional way, that has to be difficult when you read the news or hear the news that they passed on.
Yes, it always is, but I do feel like he did lead a long, you know, not long enough, but he had a great life, and I know, you know, the way Jack and Sheila take care of horses, he had a great retirement, so he was not one I was ever worried about his care or something. Sometimes when they get claimed from you and you lose track of them and you've been very close to them, you worry all the time about what's happened to them and how they are. I just know how Jack is, that everything was done right with him, and I never worried about him.
You know, I can hear the love in your voice when you talk about Goodnight Shirt, and I'm sure I'm going to hear that same sentiment when you talk about other horses that you've been around that have been through your program. But how thankful are you, Lizzie, that you chose this path for your career?
Very thankful when it goes well, and not as thankful when it doesn't go well.
How do you keep it going through the?
Definitely has its ups and downs.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I've been doing this program now for about 7 or 8 years, and I've talked to so many different trainers, heard so many different stories and backgrounds, and everybody talks about the highest highs and the lowest lows, and every horse trainer knows those all too well. How do you keep it going and keep the faith when things aren't going as well?
Well, there have been times when, you know, a horse has gotten hurt or something bad, really bad has happened to a horse. I will say, gosh, I don't think I can do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And then the next horse will come along and do just everything right, and you'd be like, why wouldn't I want to do this forever? It's great. So it definitely goes that way. And sometimes, you know, people don't realize how hard you try to do things right. And that can be hard. But then sometimes people are very, very appreciative and realize that you are trying to do everything right. And that, you know, that's one of the highs. And breeding your own is a very rewarding business when it goes well, because you've seen that animal from the time they were, you know, teeny little foal. It's really, really fun to watch the whole process, and that can be very rewarding.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Do you ever think, well, at least I had the bachelor's degree in economics. If things don't work out on this side, I can fall back on that?
Sometimes I've thought of that. My husband is not, my current husband is not involved in horse racing at all. And sometimes he's like, well, maybe you could do something a little easier that gives you a little more free time. But I don't know. I'm not sure what it would be.
Yeah, I was going to say, what else would you do? I mean, this is your life. This is what you know. You've dedicated your whole life to horses. What else would you do if you weren't training horses? What do you think it would be?
Maybe something in sales, but still with horses, probably. I mean, if I wasn't training, I'd probably still work with horses and maybe do it a little differently, you know, work in the sales. Or at one point, my husband and I discussed opening up a store in the small town where we lived, but that was kind of a passing whim. I can't imagine myself sitting behind the store counter selling things.
Yeah, once you're
out, I get very restless.
Yeah, once you're out in the barn every day and you're you're active and you're around horses, it's hard to think about, you know, going into an office position like that and not being there. What time do you start your day, Lizzie, typically every day?
Well, it really varies. I start a little later in the winter because, obviously, it doesn't get light as early. But also, I train at Fair Hill, and I found that later in the morning, both on the dirt and the tapita, the tracks are a little better. So I'll have a set or two go out before the break, but I save most of the, you know, I alternate which horses get which time slot, but I like, you know, after the harrow break, when the weather gets colder, the tracks, both tracks, tapita and the dirt, are much, much better. in the summertime, I obviously start a lot earlier because the tracks are better earlier, and the heat, you know, obviously gets to them later. But before I get to the barn every day, I have my horses on the farm to do. I have mares and foals and yearlings, and right now a couple of turf horses laid up. So right now I have 12 at home on the farm, and I have someone that mucks the stalls, but otherwise I take all the care of them, and I really, really like it that way because you know the baby so well and they trust you so much, and you can just make sure that that's, you know, you notice every time if they don't eat up right, or you, something doesn't look right, or they have a little cut or nick, you can kind of take care of it before it's a problem. And that's the one thing I like to do, is head off problems before they are problems.
Visiting with trainer Lizzie Merriman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Lizzie, how many horses would you say that you have on the farm right now?
I have 12 on the farm right now. I just have 7 in training at the track at the moment, because a lot of the horses that I train are turf horses. So they go home and go out for the winter. And then they come, you know, in the spring I usually have about 15 at Fairhill.
Tell me more about the farm. How many acres? Does it have a training track? What's the farm like?
The farm, I don't really train off the farm. We break the yearlings there in the fall, and sometimes I will leg up a turf horse there. But it's in Chester County. It used to be King Ranch land. It's 100 acres. We have 12 horses there now and about 20 head of buffalo.
20 head of buffalo? What do you do with the buffalo?
My husband hasn't heard of buffalo.
What do you do with the buffalo?
They're grass-fed buffalo raised for meat.
Wow, I'm all in. I'm going to make a trip up there to see you.
It's God's country. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it sounds like it's spectacular. And I guess Fairhill is what, about 30 miles south of Coatesville?
Yeah, maybe a little bit less, but roughly that.
Yeah, pretty special territory, pretty special country for our special guest, Lizzie Merriman.
Really is.
Yeah. I can't. I mean, I really would love to make a trip up there and see it. And I know that you specialize in bringing along young horses and you know, kind of giving them confidence to succeed as they move on through their careers. What's the right approach? How do you do that? How have you been able to have so much success with young horses?
You know, you just let every horse come to hand in their own time. I don't really have a program that they all have to follow, because they're all such individuals. I never find that the same thing works for two horses. They all mature differently. They all grow at different stages. They all have, you know, some horses, you just can't put too much speed into them because their minds are fragile, and other horses kind of need to be drilled a little bit harder because they're tougher, but they don't quite get it until they're drilled a little harder. And I'm a big advocate of, when a horse needs time, you got to give it to them, because if you keep going, then they don't last.
Yeah, so many trainers have come on this program over the years and talked about handling horses as individuals and not making it a cookie cutter type of operation. Sounds like you're on the same page in terms of the young horses. How do you determine if a horse needs to be pushed along a little bit harder, or if a horse needs to maybe go a little bit of a slower pace to get them to where they need to be? How do you go about determining that?
I mean, horses are very good at giving you information if you're willing to listen. You know, physically, if they're not doing as well, if they lose weight, if they're not moving as well, but also mentally, they might not want to walk to the track that day, and usually they're eager to train. So you think, well, if they don't want to go to the track, they don't think it's that fun, and we better change it up or lighten up on them or take them cross country, sweeten them up a little bit. Horses are a wealth of information, even if they can't talk. And we can choose to listen to them and use that information or ignore it. And our job as trainers to listen as best we can and try to use that information. But they definitely give it to you.
Tell me about a horse that was a young horse like that, that you looked at initially and said, you know what, this horse is a goofball. He or she just doesn't get it, and I don't think there's any hope for this horse. And all of a sudden, the light bulb goes on, and they go on to a productive career. Is there a horse or two that stands out to you like that?
Yes, definitely. I got a horse in a couple years ago. I'm hesitant to use names because it's an owner's horse. So,
sure, sure.
I went to see her on the farm, and she was very, very overweight and was already 3 years old and sort of a little short-strided, paddly mover. And the owner said, you know, I don't think this horse is ever going to make a racehorse. I'm not sure what to do with her. And I said, well, you know, just send her on, and, you know, I'll tell you whether I think she will or not. Let's just give it a try. Well, that filly came in, and she just was like fat little girl just waddling around the racetrack for about the first month. And then each day, like, I like this sport, and I get it, and she just blossomed into a lovely racehorse that was very, very fast and talented. Unfortunately, she wasn't the soundest, so her career was cut a little bit short, but she just completely became a different horse entirely in a short amount of time, and it was more mental than anything. I mean, she just loved it, and she was all in every day.
And then
I got another horse years ago that came to me because the owner said that, you know, they tried him as a three-day event horse, and he was too bad of a mover to make a three-day event horse, and would I try making him a race horse? I was like, well, that's kind of bad advertisement, but we'll give it a go. And he went on, like, the first couple times I breezed him, he had a complete mental breakdown, and I'm not hard on horses. It was pretty gentle breezes. I was like, what the heck? This horse is a nut job. And so I just kind of back off and make the breezes a little slower and a little longer, and the more he went, the better he went. And every day I'd look at him and be like, this is a lovely, lovely horse. This is such a nice horse. So I got really high on him and really excited and kind of pumped the owner up and took him to the races. And he still had that weird, goofy side to him. He hadn't really lost that, but, you know, we were kind of working with him, and he was loving his job and doing great. And we had him at Parks, and I threw the rider up in the paddock, and he bronc-bucked that poor kid off so far in the air. Got loose in the paddock, re-caught him, got the rider on. He went out there, ran just awful, absolutely awful. Everything was terrible. The owner was sort of like, what? I thought you said this was a really nice horse. And, you know, he learned a lot that day, came back and went on to be a multiple stakes winner on the flat and over timber. And his ability was there, but his mind just needed to come along in its own good time.
Wow, pretty amazing. She is trainer Lizzie Merriman. She is my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Lizzie, stay with me. We're going to get to a short commercial break. We'll come back and talk more about your career and some of the other horses that you've had the privilege to be around, including a horse by the name of Roadster, who I want to ask you about. That's all ahead. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic December Mixed and Horses of Racing Age Sale, Tuesday, December 10th in Timonium, Maryland. And be sure to nominate to the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, being held at Gulfstream Park on Wednesday, April 1st, 2020. The Gulfstream Sale of selected two-year-olds in training is the hottest two-year-old sale in the country and the only sale in Florida to showcase juveniles on a dirt racetrack. Recent graduates include such standouts as Nyquist, Audible, Four Star Crook, and Bellafina. The Fasig Tipton Sales. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the FIPS in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Stallion owners, there is still time to donate. The Iowa Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Stallion Auction is the only auction that the stallion owner can receive up to $15,000 by donating one season. ITBOA has paid out $105,000 so far to stallion owners and farms, such as Adena Springs, Darley, Hillendale, Pin Oak, and many others. The only stallion auction where you could receive up to $15,000. December 7th to the 16th. Visit iowathoroughbred.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And the leader's Capital Fellow, Ben's Cat, is asked for a little more by Pimentel from the outside. True Greek, now Roadhog, lurking down to the inside, followed by Saintly Love and Change of Command of the outside. Capital Fellow's tough to catch, but Ben's Cat is kicking in on the outside. Ben's Cat is taking the lead. Roadhog coming after Ben's Cat. Ben's Cat in that final furlong from Roadhog. Here's Ben's Cat. Roadhog bridging the gap on the outside. Roadhog, Ben's Cat's digging. Roadhog, Roadhog does it again. Roadhog, Ben's Cat. Roadhog beat Ben's Cat. His target sighted in the photo is Saintly Love and Capital Fellow.
That's our good friend Dave Rodman with the call of the Maryland Million Turf back in 2013. A huge win for Roadhog, defeating the outstanding Ben's Cat that day. It was the first of two wins in the Maryland Million Turf for Roadhog, who is trained by our special guest, Lizzie Merriman, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Welcome back. We'll hear more from Lizzie in just a moment, right after I remind you that if you missed any portion of this program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, all you have to do is head over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. The podcast will be available for you there to listen to at your leisure. It's all there for you. Horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And Lizzie, I think as we were getting ready to go to the break, I mentioned that we would talk about a little horse by the name of Roadster, not Roadhog, who is the horse you trained. Roadster, the winner of the Santa Anita Derby earlier this year for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. I know you would love to train Roadster too, but Roadhog is the one we need to talk about. And what a horse Roadhog was too.
Yeah, he was a really neat horse. He was a cool horse.
Ultra tough.
When he was after his three-year-old year, when he was turning four, and he just took me on a very fun ride. His owners, Ellen Lee and Dale Schilling, have been wonderful clients of mine, and they bred him, and we all had a lot of fun with him.
When he beat Ben's Cat that day, take me back to that day. What do you remember about watching him run down Ben's Cat?
Oh, he just looked so confident doing it. They had made the race. They had a turf sprint and one going about, I think, a mile and an eighth, and they combined them to a mile. And so Roadhog wanted to run farther, and Ben's Cat probably wanted to run shorter, and they had to meet in the middle, and Roadhog had just enough ground to run him down. And like I said, Dale Schilling, I owned him, and I don't think I've ever seen him more excited since I've trained for him. And that recording actually was on his answering machine on his cell phone for years. So every time I would leave him a message, I would hear that race call. So it was kind of funny to hear it on here.
Yeah, that's so cool. And that was actually the second time that Roadhog won the Maryland Million Turf. He won it in 2012, the year before, came back and beat Ben's Cat in 2013 to win it for the second time. And if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Roadhog race until like the age of 9 or something like that?
Yes. We retired him at 9. He was still sound, but he'd lost a step. And farm on Ellen's and Dale's farm. He is sort of the old statesman that raises the babies, and the yearlings get turned out with him, and he looks amazing. I saw him last year. I went to visit him, and he just looks incredible. He's an enormous horse anyway, but now in retirement, he's so big and so funny, and he's got so much character. He was really, really neat horse to be around. The whole time I had him, I galloped him, you know, nearly every day. Loved riding him, just had a ball on him, and he was one of those horses that would sort of train himself. Like I'd get on him, and he'd be like, yeah, we're just going to have a jog day today, and we'd just go jog a couple miles or go cross country, and he'd be jumping out of his skin, and it'd be like, well, we better do something more tomorrow. He really loved the Tapita. He loved Fairhill suited him well because he didn't really want to train on dirt, and that was why I actually ended up being lucky enough to get him to train, because he was at Parks with Ned Allard and wasn't loving the dirt. So they gave him a try out at Fairhill, and being able to gallop and breeze on the Tapita really helped him a lot. We would just jog on the dirt, do all the other work on the Tapita, and go for cross-country rides, and he seemed to thrive in that environment.
Earlier in the program, we talked about being around Goodnight Shirt, and you talked about how emotional it was for you when he did leave your care and got sold and transferred. How about with Roadhog when he finally retired at the age of 9? You said he lost a step, but was it hard to not see him in your barn anymore?
It was, but it was time, and I was happy for him. And, you know, he went out sound, and Alan, his owner, rode him all that, you know, the rest of that summer and fall. And then, you know, now he's living a happy retirement, and it was all sort of a feel-good situation. He'd had a great career, but it was time for him to hang up his racing tack.
Did he remember you when you went to see him on the farm?
I would say absolutely. He's a very, very smart horse, and I would say without question, he remembered me.
Yeah, pretty special when you can be around a good horse like that and have that relationship and keep him going till the age of 9. Tell me about that aspect of his career, Lizzie. How are you able to keep him sound year in and year out and competing at the highest levels?
He definitely was a horse that was pretty hard on himself. He really toed in, and he would kind of pound his heels, and he had had some knee problems before I got him and stuff. But being a turf horse in the Mid-Atlantic area, they have the benefit of getting winters off. So the shillings would take him back to the farm every winter, and he would have, you know, a good 2 to 3 months of downtime. And I think that is probably the main reason he lasted so long. And plus, like I said, about the different surfaces, he wasn't a horse that you could pound on very hard. He was a big, heavy horse, and he was a lovely mover with obviously tons of ability, but he was pretty hard on himself. You could see in his reruns of his races, he would always stumble and bobble in the races, which always scared the heck out of me, but that was just kind of how he moved. And I think changing up his surfaces really helped him have a long career doing, you know, hill work out back and lots of jog days on the dirt, and then his gallops and breezes on the Tapita. We were able to nurse him along pretty well that way.
Visiting with trainer Lizzie Merriman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Lizzie, in March of 2015, our good friend Joe Clancy wrote a piece on his website, which is thisishorseracing.com, and it was about a horse by the name of Valiant Boy. And his first line of that particular article started like this: "To know Valiant Boy is to love him. Ask trainer Lizzie Merriman about him, and you'll get plenty of reasons why." So, why do we love Valiant Boy? Tell me about him.
Well, Valiant Boy, first of all, was an Arabian, or is an Arabian. I had never trained Arabians. Sharon Clark had been at my barn looking at it for a client to send a thoroughbred to me, and she asked me if I would consider training an Arabian. And I was sort of like, well, why would you pick me? I don't have really much experience with Arabians. I rode a couple as an amateur rider, and my ex-husband had trained some Arabians, but otherwise I hadn't really done much with them. But she convinced me. She said, this horse is a really, really good horse. He's had a year off from some injuries, and he's coming back, and she really wanted him at Fair Hill, and would I please consider it? And the horse, you know, he did have, he had an incredible record, and was a very, clearly a very classy horse on paper. So I decided to give it a try, and when he arrived, I was like, well, he's small, but he's really cute. And we put the tack on him, sent him to the track, and he was about the wildest thing on the track I ever trained. Allie Rawls, who trains now, used to gallop him for me, and he could buck and play like nothing you ever saw. But when it came to running, he had the biggest heart of any horse you would ever be around. He literally gave everything he had to give every time we ran him. And he took us on a great ride. He won all four of his starts in 2014 and became the Arabian Horse of the Year. And then we were invited to take him to Dubai to run in the Arabian race on Dubai World Cup night. And that was an incredible, exciting experience. The only problem was he was supposed to have a prep race in Texas a month or so before the Dubai race. And we got a terrible snowstorm, and the plane canceled the flight, and we couldn't fly out. So he went to Dubai without a prep race. He hadn't run since October the year before. And so we had to train him up to the race at Fair Hill in a very cold winter. And I think as usual, he covered for his lack of fitness with his huge heart, because it was a mile and a quarter on the dirt at Maidan, and he put in a huge effort to finish second, and was very, very exciting.
How cool was Dubai?
That was really neat. It was just such an experience. Everything was so different and so exciting and neat. They really roll out the red carpet for you and take care of you there. It's just unbelievable. I'd never experienced anything like it. And there were a lot of things that were different, and an awful lot of paperwork, incredible amount of paperwork and the red tape and that kind of stuff. But it was all worth it and a really amazing experience.
Did that get you hooked on Arabians and training them?
No, I actually, that was kind of the stint. I had a couple others for them, and then he retired, and they moved on to another trainer, and that was the extent of my Arabian career. a lady called me a couple years ago to take a Arabian, and I didn't take him because at the time I happened to be very full, and I keep my numbers to a very manageable hands-on number, and I didn't. She had three horses, and I directed her to another trainer, Fenica Bentley, who's there at Fair Hill. And but I did sort of look back and regret it because I had so much fun with Valiant Boy, and I had a lot of fun with the people that are involved in Arabian racing, that I sort of, after the decision of not taking the horse, I did sort of regret it, but I was happy. I think Fenica's had a lot of fun with him, and it's worked out really well for her.
Yeah, it sounds like you took the same approach with Arabian Boy as you've taken with some of the thoroughbreds that you've trained. Are there some differences, though, in working with an Arabian as opposed to a thoroughbred?
Yeah. I think they probably take a little bit harder training, but not much. They have a lot of the same issues thoroughbreds have. They're just, you know, obviously they're not made to go as fast, but there's still, you know, there's good ones and sound ones and slow ones, and Valiant Boy just kind of broke the mold. He was one of the classiest horses you could ever be around. Didn't matter what breed or what discipline. I've had steeplechase horses and flat horses and, you know, thoroughbreds and Arabians. He was just a really good horse, and you can't be around anything better than a really good horse.
When I walk into Lizzie Merriman's house, or I walk into your barn at Fair Hill or whatever it might be, or even on the farm, what pictures am I going to see? I'll see Roadhog, I'm sure. I'm sure I'm going to see Arabian Boy somewhere, or Valiant Boy somewhere. Are there other horses that I'm going to see when I walk in there, other pictures or memorabilia?
Well, I kind of confine it to my office pretty much. I have one picture in the main part of my house, and in my office, I have Valiant Boy. I also have a few more obscure ones. I have a steeplechase horse named Second Amendment that I really, really liked, that I really had a lot of fun training. I have a filly named Royal Renee, who won a stake for me at Penn, and then I ended up purchasing her from her owners when she retired, and she's one of my broodmares. I have a horse named So Risky, who's a horse I bred that is, you know, only ever won a couple races and wasn't one of the more prominent horses I trained, but he also became my stable lead pony for many, many years, and I had a lot of fun with him. He was just a really cute, nice, sweet horse. And then you see the most pictures would be of With Patience, who was a filly that I trained for myself, and she won a bunch of stakes and really, really got me off the ground. I had just gotten divorced and was kind of floundering around trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and she sort of, I got her with my sister at Keeneland for $15,000, and she just went on and said, well, this is what you're going to do. And she took me on a great ride and a lot of wins and just was spectacular for several years. She definitely supported me, and she actually paid to build my barn, and she was a really, really neat filly. So, and then the only other picture that's in the main part of the house is her first foal, whose name was Incisive Strike. He's actually a hunt horse at Greenspring Hunt right now, but he never won any stakes, but he made about $350,000 the hard way and was a really hard-knocking, lovely horse, and a favorite of mine. So that's most of the ones that you'll see.
back to With Patience for a minute, the Virginia bred daughter of With Approval, who you talked about the ride that she took you on. 7 wins, 30 lifetime starts, earned nearly $400,000. But her final career start came at Saratoga when she was second in the De La Rose Stakes in 2005. She took you to Woodbine. You went to Woodbine with her, Colonial Downs. Really just the ride of a lifetime, if you want to look at it like that. How cool is it to have a horse that's that consistent and that good that you can travel around with and go to all of these big race meets and be part of these big events?
Yeah, she was really special, especially, you know, owning her myself and training her myself and her taking me on this a ride of a lifetime, like you said. I was in Kentucky with her at Keeneland, and some prominent bloodstock agent ran into me at a restaurant or whatever and asked what I was doing, and I said, oh, I brought a filly out here to run, and he looked her up and he said, how do you have a horse like this? And I was like,
well, that's nice.
You know, sometimes the small fish get lucky.
But so, you know, that has to be rewarding, right? That has to be rewarding in its own right. You're like, hey, wait a minute.
Lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
She is trainer Lizzie Merriman here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. And if you can't tell, not the biggest operation in the world. She touched on it earlier, but she has had a lot of fun in this sport and been to a lot of places courtesy of the horses that she has been around. And again, Lizzie, that has to be so rewarding for you to, especially with a horse like With Patience, where, as you mentioned, you took her from day one and kind of worked her all the way through her career. That has to be special.
Yeah, it was. And she was the type of horse, the first time I ever sat on her, she was a yearling. And I remember riding her around, thinking that she was a bit immature and thinking that she was the most lovely yearling I'd ever sat on. And I thought, well, she's by With Approval out of Lovely Later. I think she will be lovely later with Patience. And I'm going to name her With Patience so I always remember to be patient with her. And I think that did help me. I had her all ready to run as a two-year-old, and she had a little pressure in one ankle. And she was just really talented, obviously, and fast. And she was completely ready to run. The race picked out everything, and there was a little bit of pressure in the one ankle. And I looked at the ankle, and I thought, you named her that for a reason. And I just pulled off all her shoes and chucked her out in the field for the winter. And it was a hard thing to do because I was a single mother and I was really counting on her paying for my winter. But in hindsight, it was the right thing to do, and it was part of the reason I named her that.
You know, in the beginning of the show, I mentioned that you have two children. Are they in any way interested in horses at all?
They are. My son, McLean Hendricks, he actually works in commercial real estate, but he rides steeplechase horses, and he rides steeplechase races as an amateur. He gallops early before work for trainer Leslie Young, and he schools horses for me and his father, Ricky Hendricks. And he's, you know, really, really enjoys riding the steeplechase horses. And then my daughter, she just comes back from Australia on Friday. She is in her second year of the Godolphin Flying Start program.
Oh, wow.
Which is just an amazing program that she's very privileged to be a part of. And she's really enjoying seeing the world and seeing it through horse racing and learning from all different unbelievable teachers and professionals in the sport.
All right, put your trainer hat to the side for just a minute. I remember sitting at Saratoga one year, years ago, and we were sitting next to Richard Migliori's mother. And when he would ride, the gates would open, she would turn around. She couldn't watch the race. So with McLean, riding in amateur steeplechase races as a mom when you're there and he's riding. Do you hold your breath? What is that like for you as a mother?
It is the scariest thing you can possibly do.
I can imagine.
It's so scary every time he rides. Some more than others, but I mean, some horses you just have a really good feeling about and it's not as scary, and other horses you have a really bad feeling about, and I can't stop my hands from shaking on my binoculars, and I can't stand still, but I always watch.
You will watch?
I watch every bit of it.
Wow. Lizzie Merriman.
And if I'm not there, I try to watch it on live stream, but I always try to go. God forbid something would happen, I always try to be there.
Yeah, and you can't think about it that way.
And I like to be there when things go right.
That's right. Yeah, that makes it worth it, too. Lizzie Merriman is my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Just a few minutes left in the program, Lizzie. So I'll end this by asking you, number one, where would you like to eventually see your career and operation go? Maybe do you want it expanded? Are you happy where it is now? And then number two, and you never ask a two-part question, but I'm doing it. Number two, what other hobbies and things do you enjoy outside of racing? Let's start with the first question.
I want to train any bigger outfit, but I want horses to always have better and better horses. I love breeding horses that I train, and there's nothing better than thinking you're breeding if a horse is going to be a really good horse and you bred it, that's doubly or triply fun, because you have their siblings, their mother, and you plan the mating and all that. And, and aside from that, having some really nice horses for a couple of clients that appreciate your efforts and are patient. And I've been lucky enough to have, the Gardeners and the Shillings, and have those sort of clients.
And how about something that you like to do when you're not at the barn or at the racetrack? We've got about 30 seconds, Lizzie.
I like skiing. I like football. I like traveling. And I actually like, I like a nice pleasure ride that's not on a racehorse.
All right, there you go. She is Lizzie Merriman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Lizzie, been an absolute delight to hear your story. Can't thank you enough for spending some time with us here today. And all the best moving forward. Really wish you all the success in the world moving forward with your operation and with the kids.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me on.
All right, don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to a podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. Now for our producer, Lee Della Pina, for our special guest, Lizzie Merriman, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.